Well, welcome to the gasoline internet. I'm running on generator power. And I was very blessed to be in the situation where I needed to run my generator, or so I believed, because I wanted to get the video published yesterday. So I had to get my generator running, and I've never used it for this purpose to power my internet and my computers. So I've got a minimal setup here where I'm powering my laptop and my modem and the Wi-Fi device, and I've got my phone also as a camera. It's being powered, and that's about all I'm powering here. Is that right? Something pretty close to that. Well, I'm also powering my two backup power supplies, but they're possibly no good anymore because I used them a lot yesterday and it drained a lot of the power. They're going to take a long time. They're very slow recharging. I'm not sure if they're going to be any good, but I will possibly have to get some new backup devices or batteries at least. But it's very encouraging to be aware that I can actually do this on gasoline power. I'm excited about it. I can also get solar power. I can buy a device that does produce power using the sun. You know, but those devices are pretty expensive if you want to get any amount of power from the sun. But these are all possible things that are coming. But this little generator that I've got, I think it's 1500 watts. I think it's, is that all it is? It's very small, but it's a 10 amp, so breaker on it. So that's probably about right, 1500 watts. Because 10 amps times 120 volts is 10 amps times 120 volts is 1200 watts. And this is probably the breaker is set for 10 amps just because it's set lower than it needs to be. So the circuit breaker, you know, but that's just to protect against overcurrent. Because there can be spikes above that. So the peak power is probably 1500. And the circuit breaker probably doesn't trip on a peak amperage. It probably trips on a root mean square, RMS, or average amperage is what I'm guessing. But anyway, you know, there are lots of things to learn all the time. This is amazing, though. I mean, I'm running on power now. I've been running, and then I went and got gas. I went and bought some gas today, too. That was a lot of work to get my car going because I had to get the cover off it. Oh, I still haven't got the cover back on the car yet. That's right. That's another thing I got to do. Haven't done that yet. It's just lying on the driveway somewhere, or, you know, tucked away in the doorway of the drive carport. Anyway, it's exciting. It's exciting because now I know that if I could buy a bigger generator and I could run my house on backup power, probably, because I'm able to do it. I was able to figure out how to plug my two battery backup devices into the power without making a mess, you know, because they're sometimes plugged in behind things and the plugs are out of sight, which is a little bit messy and hard to figure out what's plugged into what in a lot of cases too with my Wi-Fi devices. I had two devices that are capable of Wi-Fi, but only one of them was being used for Wi-Fi. These are my time capsule, my Apple time capsule devices. And today I'm booting off my regular hard drive, which is exciting because that means probably I'm producing. See if I can do it. See if I can look at it and get something here. Well, I got two emails. I better not look at them yet. Let's look at what we've got today. I don't want to look at my emails yet. Okay. That's my user guides. Let's see today's. Yeah, there's the video file that's being created. So I'm actually looking at seeing whether it's producing the video file in the normal way, and it is. So our study for today, so today we'll be recording with OBS Studio, whereas yesterday we used the iPhone and internal storage of the iPhone, whereas today it's OBS Studio recording on the external drive again, which the one I normally boot off, actually. So the date of the Exodus, I had to plug my external drives directly into my laptop instead of into my Thunderbolt docks, and that's how it works. So, I mean, with computers, I was concerned I wouldn't even be able to set it up with the generator and how I would do it and what I would do. And I'm only going to use one monitor, and it's very dimly lit because I don't have any other monitors giving me light. But believe it or not, it was more difficult to get the generator started. That was the more difficult thing. And I want to give a piece of advice about that. When you're starting an engine, a lot of small engines, they have a little valve. You have to turn on the valve to get the gas flowing. And then you got to remember to turn that off again when you're done. But that little valve that you open needs to be open when you start the engine. And then you also need to choke the engine when it's cold. You turn the choke to a setting of probably near full if it's cold outside, especially. It's got to be set to full choke. Then when you start the engine, you got to immediately begin to reduce the choke. It's very important that you begin very quickly to reduce that choke. And then if you don't reduce it quickly enough, or if you reduce it too quickly and you stall the engine, then it's possible that the best thing you can do after that is to wait for 15 minutes for all the gas to evaporate from inside, because it's possible that you've flooded the spark plug and prevented it from being able to start. So if you wait 15 minutes or so, 10 or 20 minutes, something like that, then that, or maybe in some cases even a little longer, but that's enough time for the gasoline to evaporate from inside the spark plug. And then you can use full choke again and start it just the same as before. And that's a very useful thing to know when you're starting engines that have a choke on them. And also when they have a stopcock, also when you need to open the gas. Because when I fail, and I've started many different engines during my life, but when I fail to start this particular engine, there's no way I can start it again unless I wait 15 minutes. It's just, there's no way to tell what the choke wants to do or what it wants me to do. I just can't start it. So, and I've tried. So, and I don't think I'm, you know, all that lacking in knowledge about it. It's just something, but every time I wait 15 minutes and then put full choke and start again, it works. So I thought I might have water in my gas too. So in that case, you can add some gasoline antifreeze. If there's any water in your gas, that will greatly reduce it and eliminate the water. Okay, so the date of the Exodus can be approached from a different angle by considering the burning of Jericho. This is Wild Road article. Part 1, Chapter 5, Paragraph 12. The date of the Exodus can be approached from a different angle by considering the burning of Jericho, when it can be shown that such an event occurred 1452. That is the burning of Jericho. But before we start that, let's just review what we said yesterday about Joseph being Salidus. I looked up the scripture, okay? I looked that up. Is this it here? Not that one. Let's see. It's this one. Here it is. I looked it up yesterday, and I want to show you that it is Genesis 42 and 6 where it says the governor. Joseph was the governor, it says. Genesis 42 and 6. And that word, salit, you see that word? Hasalit. Salitus or salit is there. Hasalit. Shalit or salit is actually that word in the Hebrew text. So that's shown. If you read the Hebrew from right to left here, the ha is this H symbol on the right. And the she sound, the sh, is this three-pronged character. And then this other squiggly character is lamed, or L. So shalla, shalla. And then the little apostrophe kind of, or small character that's up above the bottom line, it's up at the upper part of the other letters, it is the I. And then you have, it's like the dot on the I, really, it's that sort of thing. And then you have this letter here, which is the T. There's more than one T sound, or there's more than one letter that represents a T in Hebrew. Anyway, let's come back. So that was something I mentioned before. It just shows it really is true that Joseph was this person, Salitis. It looks very much convincing when we look at the Hebrew text. Okay, and now the date of the Exodus. Okay, if we can show that Jericho was burned around 1452, that would prove our date of the Exodus in 1493, since this would be the time of Israel's arrival in 1452, that is, there at Jericho, under Joshua's leadership, after the Bible's stated 40 years and some months of their wilderness wandering. According to Mr. David Livingston, William Deaver gives a date for the start of the Late Bronze Age and makes a strong case for lowering the Late Bronze 1A, thereby using that strong case of William Deaver, to 1450. He lowers the Late Bronze 1A date to 1450 BCE. And then, quote, it takes into account the difficulty that virtually all scholars acknowledge in discerning a clear ceramic break between the Middle and Late Bronze Ages. In brackets, quoting Deaver, 1992:16, he puts the Late Bronze 1A start at 1450 BCE, end quote, and end bracket, too. He offers Deaver's, quote, composite transitional Middle Bronze 3 to Late Bronze 1A phase. Evidently, the Middle Bronze 3 is the last phase of that Middle Bronze, and Late Bronze comes right after Middle Bronze, and then 1A is the first phase of the Late Bronze, so Middle Bronze 3 to Late Bronze 1A. That transition phase, which could embrace both the later campaigns of Thutmose III that ended Middle Bronze 3, end quote. So, composite transitional Middle Bronze 3 to Late Bronze 1A phase, which would embrace both the later campaigns of Thutmose III that ended the Middle Bronze 3 period, as he offers that as Deaver's reasoning. Okay. So that's because we know when Thutmose ruled. We know he ruled from 1493, or he died onward. And his grandfather, Thutmose I, died in 1493, but he backdated his own reign to 1493 after his father ruled for 3 years from 1493 to 1490 and so on. We've talked about this before, but Thutmose, he ruled from roughly 1493. Even if you don't believe the exact numbers, it's still roughly right. We believe that's when he ruled, 1493. I mean, a lot of scholars do believe that. And that's why they're talking about Thutmose, his campaigns, which were later, they were more like, he ruled for 53 or 54 years. So he ruled until 1440, roughly, or 1439, actually. 1439 BCE. So his campaigns were not quite as late as 1439, but they were more around 1452 or 1450, that time period. That's why the campaigns of Thutmose III have a bearing on the dating of 1450 for this period of the end of the Middle Bronze Age, for example, in Middle Bronze 3, with that being the last phase of Middle Bronze. Okay, so Livingston thus makes the end of Middle Bronze II 100 years lower and eliminates the problem Kathleen Kenyon found that made her date the fall of Jericho 100 years too early, causing her to conclude that Joshua wasn't at Jericho. Thus, Jericho confirms the 1493 Exodus date. So Kathleen Kenyon dated Jericho as being 100 years too early for the time of the Exodus, the burning of Jericho. So she believed and concluded that Joshua could not have been at Jericho at the right time. So she concluded, therefore, Joshua was never at Jericho. Whereas when we make the adjustment for the Middle Bronze 2 and 3, by lowering Middle Bronze 2 and Middle Bronze 3, but the end of Middle Bronze 2 is lowered 100 years, we don't have any problem anymore with this dating of Jericho. Jericho then is burned in 1452 BCE by Joshua, and that confirms our date of the Exodus, 1493, 40 years and some months earlier, 1493 BCE, the Exodus. And that's all for that. And then we got some comments in the footnotes. What I don't think we'll dwell on those today because we're in a power outage here. Let's go on for today's study. Let's look at this. I have not had a chance to prepare all of it, but I'm I prepared a little bit of it in the Gideon Bible, which I have a copy of. I was on the street in Ottawa witnessing one day, downtown on one of the main streets of Ottawa, and I think it was sort of Montreal Road or, you know, the very main street, and a person on the street, I was talking to him about the Bible, and he just happened to have a Bible in his hand, and he said one of the Gideons, I guess, had given it to him or something. I think he'd had it. I can't remember when he had it in his hand, I don't think he went away and got it, so he must have had it in his hand the whole time. But I was talking to him about the Bible, and so he said, you should take this Bible. You know, he gave it to me. He just gave me his Bible. And I accepted it. I still have it. But that was interesting because he did something for Jehovah by giving me something. I really didn't think I needed a Bible, but I was very interested in the Bible at that time too, because that was when I was first studying intensely the New World Translation, and I was interested in all the different translations. Anyway, and Jacob, it says in Genesis 37, continued to dwell in the land of the alien residences, little children of his father, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. It's interesting, it says this is the history of Jacob, because it's going to talk about Joseph. So it's the history of Jacob, and that's giving us a reason why, when we considered the ruling of the governor's rule began when we did the math, it added up to 1914 BCE for the beginning of the governor's rule in Egypt, and that would be when Jacob arrived. So this is giving us a reason for that statement that the chronology of the beginning of Joseph's rule in Egypt, even though he started in 1923 BCE to become the ruler, and he became the governor at that point, it was 9 years later when he began to rule with his father and brothers being present. So when it says this is the history of Jacob, it's interesting, because then it says Joseph, when 17 years old, happened to be tending sheep with his brothers among the flock. And being but a boy, he was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, the wives of his father. So Joseph brought a bad report about them to their father. And Israel loved Joseph more than all his other sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he had a long striped shirt-like garment made for him. When his brothers came to see that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they began to hate him, and they were not able to speak peacefully to him. Later on, Joseph had a dream and told it to his brothers, and they found further reason to hate him. And he went on to say to them, "Listen, please, to this dream that I have dreamed. Well, here we were binding sheaves in the middle of the field, when here my sheaf got up and also stood erect, and here your sheaves proceeded to encircle and bow down to my sheaf." And his brothers began to say to him, "Are you going to be king over us for certain? Or are you going to dominate over us for certain?" So they found fresh reason to hate him over his dreams and over his words. After that, he had still another dream, and he related it to his brothers and said, "Here I have had a dream once more, and here the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." Then he related it to his father as well as his brothers, and his father began to rebuke him and say to him, "What does this dream that you have dreamed mean? Am I and also your mother and your brothers for certain going to come and bow down to the earth to you?" And his brothers grew jealous of him, but his father observed the saying. His brothers now went to feed the flock of their father close by Shechem. After a while, Shechem is up north of Jerusalem. After a while, Israel said to Joseph, "Your brothers are tending flocks close by Shechem, are they not? Come and let me send you to them." At this he said to him, "Here I am." So he said to him, "Go, please. See whether your brothers are safe and sound, and whether the flock is safe and sound, and bring me back word." With that he sent him away from the low plain of Hebron, and he went on toward Shechem. Later a man, Hebron south of Jerusalem, later a man found him, and here he was wandering in a field. Then the man inquired of him, saying, "What are you looking for?" To this he said, "It is my brothers I am looking for. Tell me, please, where are they tending flocks?" And the man continued, "They have pulled away from here, because I heard them saying, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph kept on after his brothers and found them at Dothan. Well, they caught sight of him from a distance, and before he could get close by them, they began plotting cunningly against him to put him to death. So they said to one another, "Look, here comes that dreamer. And now come and let us kill him and pitch him into one of the water pits, and we must say a vicious wild beast devoured him. Then let us see what will become of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to deliver him out of their hand. So he said, "Let us not strike his soul fatally." And Reuben went on to say to them, "Do not spill blood. Pitch him into this water pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a violent hand upon him." His purpose was to deliver him out of their hand in order to return him to his father. So it came about that as soon as Joseph came to his brothers, they went stripping Joseph of his long garment, even the long striped garment that was upon him, after which they took him and pitched him into the water pit. At the time the pit was empty, there was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat bread. When they raised their eyes and took a look, why, here was a caravan of Ishmaelites that was coming from Gilead, and their camels were carrying labdanum and balsam and resinous bark on their way to take it down to Egypt. At this Judas said to his brothers, "What profit would there be in case we killed our brother and did cover over his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and do not let our hand be upon him. After all, he is our brother, our flesh." So they listened to their brother. Now men, Midianite merchants, went passing by. Hence they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the water pit, and then sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 silver pieces. Eventually these brought Joseph into Egypt. Later Reuben returned to the water pit, and here Joseph was not in the water pit. Consequently he ripped his garments apart. When he returned to his other brothers, he exclaimed, "The child is gone, and I, where am I really to go?" However, they took Joseph's long garment and slaughtered a male goat and repeatedly dipped the long garment in the blood. After that, they sent the long striped garment and had it brought to their father and said, "This is what we found. Examine, please, whether it is your son's long garment or not." And he went examining it and exclaimed, "It is my son's long garment. A vicious wild beast must have devoured him. Joseph is surely torn to pieces." With that, Jacob ripped his mantles apart and put sackcloth upon his hips and carried on mourning over his son for many days. And all his sons and all his daughters kept rising up to comfort him, but he kept refusing to take comfort and saying, "For I shall go down mourning to my son in Sheol," meaning the grave. And his father continued weeping for him. However, the Midianites sold him into Egypt to Potiphar, a court official of Pharaoh, the chief of the bodyguard. So Joseph arrived in Egypt in that way, as a slave. So that's the end of Genesis chapter 37, little children. And I think I better stop now in case we get a power failure or something. That was wonderful, I thought. I certainly thought it was good to review that again, because I haven't read that for quite a while, that chapter of Genesis. We see how Joseph was blessed by Jehovah in many ways, and of course, oftentimes the way Jehovah blesses us is by giving us a challenge. And it turns out in the end to be a blessing, and Jehovah knows that. So when I had a power failure, I was finally induced on this occasion to learn how to use my generator to power my internet. So that's why I said the gas-powered internet. And today I'm wearing my my chronograph. I don't know if we can get it. Hey, there it is. Yeah, you can get it on screen here. On the, and also my mother-of-pearl dial, which I wound. I had to wind all my watches at the start of the day. Did I wind these? I'm not even sure I've wound them. Yeah, I don't think I wound these watches. I did wind that one. I don't think I wound this watch. I'll wind it immediately following. So, for Ward Green, it's Hammy Crow and Moppy saying, bye for now. I love you, by the way, very much. I don't want to forget to say that. And have a wonderful day.